Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Where are we?
We are in Harrogate, the centre of Harrogate. We're about just under 600 metres from the finish line of the World Championship.
And who are you?
And I'm Lizzie Dagnan.
Fantastic. And I'm glad you said it, because now I won't ever pronounce it wrong again.
Yeah, it's just spelt wrong, really.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Glorious day.
Yeah, not bad.
Really good.
Although, you know, we're only 5 minutes away from a rainstorm, so.
Don't say that.
So the Wales comes this way up there.
Yeah.
So that's why there's quite a bit of work going on.
Isn't a lot of the routes in Harrogate the same as the tour did when it came here?
I think the finishing straight is,
past Betty's.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Shiny helmet too. It's cool.
Sagan special.
Yeah.
Shiny shoes.
Oh wow.
You know, I can't.
They're all Sagans.
Yeah, limited. Yeah.
Right. Cool.
I'm a bit of a tart for it. Thing is, if I can't go as fast as people, I have to make up for it in other ways.
Yeah, to look shiny.
Wear black to look slim, you know. So yeah, you normally live in Monaco,
yeah.
But you grew up here, right? You grew up in Otley, or?
Yeah, I grew up in Otley my whole life. I think my parents moved into our house when I was about 6 months old.
Okay.
So, yeah, that's the only house I've ever known, and yeah, it's a lovely place, Otley. Real community, you know? That's what I miss about being away from home. We're getting left here.
I was talking to Geraint Thomas and Chris Froome together a couple of weeks before we recorded this, and they're very different in terms of their view of Monaco.
Right.
For Chris, he says Africa feels like a long way away now, and he feels like Monaco's home, and he'll probably be there after he retires. Whereas Geraint was saying he can't wait to get back to Cardiff.
Yep.
Monaco made him the rider he is.
Yep.
But when he's done, he's back to South Wales like a shot.
Yeah.
Which one are you most like?
I might do, yeah, definitely. I mean, it serves a purpose, and there's no doubt, like, I've had a better career because I've been based there. Just the consistency of the weather is a huge thing. The amount of climbing that I do every day. The bubble is the main thing. So yeah. We've been at home in the UK between the Tour de Yorkshire and the Women's Tour. So it's been about 6 weeks.
Yes.
And there's just, you know, I've got family and friends here, and I end up feeling guilty for not seeing them enough. And it, you know, when I do see them, it's kind of compromising recovery between sessions.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you have to kind of be very boring to be good. So
there's always a trade-off of sorts, though, isn't there? Especially now that you're a mum to Orla.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. She is the priority, no doubt.
Yeah.
So recovery is not what it used to be, but we're figuring it out slowly between me and Phil about how, what's best to do when I get back in from training, and all his sleep routine and stuff. It all just takes a bit of time to settle, and I feel like we're on the cusp of kind of being more relaxed with everything, you know?
Yeah. And let's go sort of before Orla was born, because obviously with Phil, people might not know that he used to race for Team Sky before retiring. So he must be more understanding than most partners would be, given that he's lived a life himself.
Yeah, I would be lost without him completely. Like I say, to be good, you have to be boring. And a lot of the times you just feel shattered. You're either riding your bike or getting in and feeling shattered. And to have somebody there who's not kind of demanding that we go off and do things, you know, it's a big sacrifice for him as well.
Yeah.
And I suppose I kind of lived that last year when I was pregnant and not riding my bike or not training, you know.
Yes.
And I was bored. I was so bored. You know, he was getting out training all day and coming back. And
were you jealous?
I was jealous, yeah. So I can understand his point of view as well now, that it is limiting. To be the partner of a professional athlete is limiting, so it does help that he understands that.
It's a damn sight easier though for the male pros to become parents without it affecting their routine too much.
Yeah.
You know, if their partner goes into labour and they're away at a race, they might pop back for a couple of days and get back on it. Whereas clearly you and other mums who race have had to take months out to let nature take its course.
Yeah.
Let's talk about what it was like being pregnant. It was frustrating because you couldn't be the athlete that you're used to being.
I suppose I was at a point though where I was very ready for a change and a rest.
Yeah.
And a different focus. I'd got really tired of the professional athlete life.
Uh-huh.
I wanted more, and taking a year off to, you know, whilst being pregnant, I embraced other things, just stupid stuff. Like, I've been invited to Wimbledon for the last 10 years, you know, and I've never been. But this year I went and soaked up all the mocktails and the atmosphere and just enjoyed the benefits that you, kind of the rewards that you get for being successful.
Yes.
I indulged in those a little bit, and that was fun. But it's also a reminder that when you're in it, like now, and I'm tired and I sometimes resent the life, the
yes.
boring life, actually, it suits me better because I'm not kind of a party goer anyway. And that year off reminded me that all those things that I think I'm missing, I'm not really, if you know what I mean.
You're not Bradley Wiggins.
Definitely not Bradley Wiggins. So. I'm boring probably.
So when Orla arrived, did it knock you for six?
Oh my goodness. Yeah. Having a baby is crazy. Like, you think, you know, you hear all these parents saying how hard it is and how, you know, you'll miss all your normal things in life, blah, blah, blah. And honestly, that first 6 weeks, I just thought, how is this possible? Because at that moment in time, you have no idea that it's going to get better.
Yeah.
And you just think, I can't function like this. And you know, those moments, I was thinking, how on earth am I going to get back to professional sport? But I really kind of forgot about cycling for about 6 weeks.
Yeah.
I said to myself, this is about you and Orla and Phil. And that's all I focused on day after day,
yeah.
Like just getting through each day, you know.
It's special how it forces you to change, doesn't it?
I mean, yeah, it does, yeah.
I'm a dad, so I've got two girls. I can't really remember life before they came along.
Yeah.
Because I'm a completely different person because of these two small people running around. And it happens very quickly, doesn't it?
I think in the beginning, that was almost... It was a massive clash in my mind. Like, I'd been so used to being selfish and focused on what was right for me and my career. And
yeah.
Actually, rather than get anxious by the change in routine or that things aren't going well with Orla, it's kind of like learning to accept that and embrace it has made all the difference. I'm so much more relaxed than I used to be.
Has it made you happier?
Oh, 10 times, yeah. Way happier. Yeah, I love being a mum. Yeah.
I've seen the pictures on Instagram. Your smiles are a mile wide, aren't they? Especially hers.
Yeah.
Your lovely smile.
Yeah, she's full of life and character already. I think that's also nice. Like, at the moment, she's changing so much.
Yeah.
And she's becoming a little person, you know. We are a family of three now, and not just two parents who've got this kind of little package of scariness that she was when she arrived, you know, like we're all have our place now in the family.
And you sought some advice and help from the likes of Dame Sarah Story, who's a good friend of mine, and obviously a racing mum, Laura Kenny as well. You spoke to them about combining the cycling life with being a mum.
Laura was lovely, you know, very congratulatory, and explained that, you know, it'll be hard, but don't give up because it's worth it and you will enjoy it. And she was right. And then Sarah, I spoke to you specifically about breastfeeding because she breastfed both of her children for quite a long time.
Yeah.
Even after she started racing. So I just came to kind of get rid of some of the myths that were around that and understand better what I was capable of doing. So she was really useful for that.
I think it's really important, isn't it, for professional women athletes to dispel those myths around being a mum and being an athlete. You know about the stuff recently with
Nike.
Yeah, some athletes saying that I've been supported by my sponsors. I know you have.
Yeah.
So I'm not asking you about that, but you must see the landscape and think there's still so much work to do to accept mums just doing what is the most natural thing on earth.
Exactly. I think there's massive, what's the word? There's still loads to be done in terms of protecting athletes as employees.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of like everyone's hobby cyclists and then they're lucky enough, you know, it's often described as lucky enough to become professionals. And you're so desperate that sometimes you might accept things in your contract that aren't correct, and you know, everyone's expected to be superhuman, so there aren't the protections that a lot of normal employment contracts have. So yeah, things like maternity should be in place, but in my opinion things like paternity should always be in place as well, because you know, like you say, there are men who have, you know, their wife giving birth. 2 days later, they're going to a 3-week tour. And there's this perception that, well, you know, that's fine. But I'm sure the majority of men would like the protection to be able to say to their team, I'm not racing for 2 weeks or 3 weeks.
Yes.
And that not be seen negatively, you know. So competitive to be a professional male cyclist. Contracts up for grabs at the end of every season, unless there is that bar set in your contract that it's okay to have parental leave, then it'll never happen because you're so replaceable.
Yeah.
But you know, there's so much more to it, like mental health as well is a massive issue at the moment and being talked about, which is really good, but that comes from treating athletes like humans.
Yes.
And allowing things like a family life to be part of, you know, success.
Yeah.
And it's just so old school cycling. I'm going left here. It's not really afforded to anybody.
Cycling's so old school. I think there's still that attitude that, wow, you're so lucky to be a pro cyclist. It's not luck, is it? It's hard work and it's talent, like any profession.
Yeah, there's not many people who are lucky to be a professional athlete. It takes years of dedication and sacrifice, and it's not as easy as it sometimes looks, no.
So the dedication started on these roads, didn't it?
It did, yeah.
How old were you when you started getting out on your bike, and who was influential? Your mum, your dad, who took you out first?
So I started cycling when I was 15.
Quite late.
Yeah, I was talent spotted at school. So I wasn't a cyclist, didn't have a bike. And basically British cycling were talent spotting, sending kind of trailers into schools full of bikes and crude kind of testing on school fields, sprinting. And I was, to be honest, I was just messing around. And then there was this lad who I'd known since primary school who kind of taunted me into having a race with him. And I couldn't resist, and I beat him, obviously. And I was given a bike and a coach and £500 of lottery funding.
Wow.
Which, when you're 15, I'm waitressing for £3 an hour. You know, I was like, this sucks, all right, actually. Yeah, I basically started from there, and I was lucky enough that my first coach was a guy called Phil West. He's a successful cyclist himself and full of character and probably the best coach I've ever had or will have. He just brought out the best in me and taught me so much from a really balanced perspective, because I think at that age, it's balance is so important. Like, yeah. There are so many good riders, I'm going left here, who I beat, you know, who were beating me as a junior.
Yes.
I was nowhere near them, but they fell away at kind of 17, 18. Because they'd not had that balance. And
you mean balance in their life?
Yeah, yeah, you know. And lucky for me, I was from an active sporting family, but mum and dad weren't ever saying, Lizzie, get to that bike race, or,
no,
you know.
They weren't pushy.
I'm always, you know, taking the mick out of them that they're glory supporters, because they've only started coming to bike races when I started getting good. But no, I owe a lot to Phil West, really.
Did you fall in love with it straight away?
No. I thought it was a weird sport. I was like, weird old man sport, which it was back then.
It still kind of is, isn't it?
I don't know. There's lots of shiny people around these days. Back then it was like baggy, lycra, yellow, sort of waterproofs, and I wasn't good at it to begin with. Like, I was all right, but I wasn't winning. But something kind of kept me going, probably Phil West.
Yeah.
And then as soon as I started to have a bit of success, that's when I enjoyed it.
What did they see in you that made them think, you've got talent, you can do this? Was it competitive nature? Was it your physicality? What was it?
I think it was my physicality.
Yeah.
Like, competitiveness is something I lack, I think. I wish I was more competitive. Physically, my talent has always been my ability to recover really quickly.
Uh-huh.
So those efforts on the track, which is where I started, points race type efforts, I was just very good at.
Yeah.
So it's probably that.
So going all out for 20 minutes, recovering, because
yeah,
track meets, there's always several races in an evening, isn't there? So you have,
yeah,
to recover quick.
Is, yeah. And about, you know, sprinting for the points and then recovering straight away in order to carry on for the next sprint. Or
yeah. And any young cyclist listening, would you extol the virtues of starting on the track and getting your racecraft honed there and your bike handling skills as well? Is that a good place to start, you think?
Yeah, 100%. I think the track is the best place to start. Well, it was for me, because you're learning about everything. Race tactics, how to, like, the efficiency of your pedal stroke, you know.
Yeah.
You're on a fixed gear, you don't have brakes, so you have to use your energy effectively and efficiently. You deal with things like as simple as having a stadium full of people, you know, the crowds. It feels quite pressurized because you're in this kind of goldfish bowl.
Yeah.
Left.
I let these guys go past. Stunning stately home we just went past, actually.
Yeah, there's so many around,
yeah,
here.
It is beautiful.
Thank you, I think so.
Yeah, it really is. Anyway, back to the early years, which other riders did you come across then that we will know now?
Joanna Rousel.
Yeah.
Chand. She was this super, super shy girl from London, and she had no choice when I met her but to come out of her shell, I think. Kind of dragged her out of it, and we became really good friends and have been ever since, because we went on the same journey, really. We both were from non-cycling families.
Yes.
Both weren't the best to begin with, but Jo was just like, if you ever spent time with her or around her on a bike, she's just raw power. Like,
yeah.
She's so strong. And when the team pursuit came into the Olympic program, like, couldn't have been more perfect for her.
It made so, for her, yeah.
Such an incredible athlete. So, yeah, she was, yeah, a lifelong friend that I made. And then, I mean, on the men's side of the program, I was junior at the same time as people like Peter Kenner,
yeah,
Johnny Bellis. That was kind of the group at the time. And they've all gone on to have their own success too.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
When did it start to become a thing where you thought, actually, this could be my job, this could be my life and career?
I think there was a turning point after sixth form. So you have those UCAS days at school. And I remember saying to my mum the night before the UCAS day, I don't think I'll bother going to school tomorrow, mum. My mum's brilliant. Like, she was a teacher, believe it or not, and she kind of said, well, yeah, fine. You know, if you don't want to go to uni, don't waste your time.
Yeah.
And I was very lucky that I had that kind of open-minded approach at home. It wasn't like uni is the be-all and end-all, and it was weird because at the time, every single day at school,
yeah,
there was something about university.
Yeah.
Nothing for the people who wanted to do a trade or an apprenticeship or something else. So it's kind of felt like going to school was a waste of time, but I did it. I did my A-levels and I got this offer to go on the academy. And I think it was something like £6,000 a year, subsidized rent,
yeah,
and a track-based program in Manchester. And it just seemed more appealing at the time than going to university. So yeah, I took the leap and moved to Manchester.
Up to that point, what other ambitions did you have? Did you want to be anything else?
I always wanted to be a policewoman, which is weird. But no, I hadn't got, you know, something that I was passionate about. And I feel so lucky that cycling found me, because it's given me an incredible life, you know, that I wouldn't have found for myself unless the talent team came to school.
Was there a point where it clicked, though, where instead of thinking, oh, I've got to go and do this, I've got to go and do that, I want to do it, I want to get out and get better?
Yeah. Me and my friend went to a World Cup on the track.
Yeah.
And I remember watching Vicky Pendleton, and she was just phenomenal. Like, the crowds are just up on their feet every time she got up on the track. And it was the first time that I kind of thought, cycling's actually quite cool. You know, it still felt kind of a little bit embarrassing. I didn't go to school on my bike, or, you know, being in Leica around friends. Just, I wasn't ashamed, but I wasn't proud either.
Yeah.
So I guess watching the elite track team having that success, thinking, actually, I want a slice of that.
You mentioned Laura Kenny before. Now, Laura, obviously a trackie too, who sort of forced herself almost to do road, but her heart was always on the track, and she's now getting ready for Tokyo 2020 with her husband. Whereas are you the other way around? Did you, obviously you started on track, but then did you think the road is the one for me?
So, I was a points race rider, through and through. That was my ability and where my heart laid. I love the game of the points race, and also the kind of athlete you had to be to do well in the points race. It suited me. But then it was just before London 2012, they changed the Olympic program and they made it into the Omnium and the Team Pursuit. So the Omnium had the flying lap in it and the Pursuit in it, timed events.
Not your cup of tea.
Not my cup of tea. I tried really, really hard to improve my Pursuit, but I'm not somebody who can hold that power by myself for, what is it, 3.5 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not the big engine like Joe Rouse or Laura Kenny. I'm a good team pursuer because it's that on-off again, but so the writing was on the wall, really. And when you had somebody like Laura Kenny coming up through the ranks, you know, I couldn't, you know, I had no answer to her in the Omnium. So actually, I made the decision to quit the track and focus on the road and try and make the London 2012 road team, which could have been a long shot at the time when I made that decision. But I absolutely loved it, and I have always loved the road more.
Yeah.
I'm somebody who likes to be outside. For me, the track, towards the end, I hated it. I really hated it.
Because you're stuck indoors.
Yeah. Yeah. Felt a bit like, you know, when you go in through the doors. I mean, it's not the same anymore. I have a different perspective on it now, but felt like walking into hospital at the time. Like the same plastic doors, walls, and I just, in comparison to getting out in the fresh air, it was no comparison.
No. I remember vividly you racing to silver at London 2012.
Yeah.
Not least because all the cycling team were in those helmets that looked like, made you look like an ice cream. But it was the first medal of the London Olympics, wasn't it? That you got, and you were racing Marianne Vos to get on the podium. You must have felt pretty vindicated having then become a medal-winning Olympian.
Yeah, absolutely. It was the best decision I ever made. And it was a decision based on what made me happiest rather than what was the best chance of a medal. You know, if I'd have stayed on the track and tried to make the Team Pursuit team, if you're good enough to be in a British Team Pursuit team, then you're good enough to get an Olympic medal, no doubt, you know? So the road was a complete lottery going left here. And I suppose since then, I've always tried to make decisions that include my happiness in them, because you're always more successful when you're happy.
Yeah. And that then started, well, it didn't really start, you were obviously doing well before then, but really set in motion a chain of events which saw you winning all sorts of things.
Yeah.
Including the World Championships in Richmond in Virginia in the US 2015.
Yeah.
Same year Sagan won his first as well. I mean, what a pair of winners. And it was...
Yeah, I think that's where the similarities stop though.
Oh, I don't know. Well, I mean, again, I didn't have to jog my memory to remember it, because I remember watching you right at the end of the race, you went off the front.
Yeah.
The rest of the bunch up front with you panicked, couldn't get you back. You eased off. They caught you. You went again.
Yeah.
Great race winning move. And you were just so much stronger. And you knew it, right?
Yeah, I did, yeah. It was, that was my race to lose. Looking back now when I'm kind of fighting for top tens at the moment, I think, God, why did I enjoy that more? I literally would decide how the race would go because I was that strong. And that's so much fun to race like that.
Why were you so strong at the time? Was it both physical and mental strength?
A bit of both. I mean, I trained like an animal, like crazy. I was relentless. I didn't leave anything to chance. I never did less. I always did more.
Yeah. Of what? What kind of training? What made you train like an animal?
I suppose that winter, I was with Phil, and Phil moved in, and he was an incredible professional. Like, Phil never ever once said, "I can't be bothered today."
Yeah.
The words never came out of his mouth, and I suppose you kind of rise to your environment, don't you? And
Yeah. He
always ate so well and ate a lot. Like, things, you know, my nutrition improved dramatically when he moved in, because I always wanted to be as lean as possible, and I used to do that by not eating enough.
Yeah.
And when he moved in, it was like, you know, he'd do like the Irish mammy and try and feed me up. But it worked, and I trained behind him quite a lot, and I started to have these kind of sparks of success, like a lot of second places, and I just had the belief then I could do it.
And that took you to the US, and then
Yeah. Did
you know before the race that it would go well for you? Did you have a feeling?
No, I was in tears on the start line. Well, not on the start line, a couple of minutes before. I had done absolutely everything I could right, left nothing to chance. And then we arrived at the race and there was no one at our team camper. It was locked.
Why?
Because the staff were looking after the junior men's race. Now, I lost my shit big style.
Yeah.
Burst into tears just because I was so tightly, you know, sprung. I was just so ready for it. And that final detail, you know, I stood in the car park as the favourite of the world title. So this is ridiculous. Obviously, since, you know, we've had post-Worlds discussions or whatever, and British Cycling, you know, admitted that they were a bit useless. And they've never been that useless since. But I was, yeah, actually, after that teary moment,
Yeah. All
the kind of stress and nervous energy had left me, and just felt good. Yeah, I felt really good in the race.
Good to have a cry.
Yeah, I mean, I never cry ever. So I think the girls around me were thinking, what the hell are we meant to do? So I won that world title, and I was already thinking about Rio.
Really?
The Olympic Games within...
Next thing.
Yeah, just completely focused. And, you know, it's crazy because your career is so short and you don't realise that until you're coming to the end of it.
Yeah.
I just thought that would be... Genuinely, I thought that would be one of many. Because I was that good and that strong, I was like, you know... But looking back now, I realise so much went into that world title.
Yeah.
They're really not easy things to win. And I wish I'd celebrated it like it was the last one I was ever going to have, you know?
What about when you're back on these home roads? Do people recognise you, say hello, want to race you? That often happens when pros are out in their backyard.
Yeah, that does happen a lot.
Yeah. And I bet it's blokes. I bet it's not women. I bet it's blokes, right?
Well, yeah. I'm really lucky that I come from Yorkshire because it's so popular now.
Yeah.
Like, every day I'm riding, there's people out on the bikes, and I like being a part of that.
Tell me about round here then, and you know, you're back here now. I know you've got a place just outside Harrogate too, which I guess you're planning to come back to when it's all done and dusted, are you? That will that be home afterwards?
Yeah, definitely. I'll be here in a shop. Yeah. We all will, yeah. I mean, I have my sister and my brother close by, my grandparents. We're a very close family, so I miss, you know, the Sunday meal every day, every Sunday. I miss that.
Yeah.
And I hate missing that. I hate missing just the day to day. Like, my family will say, oh, Lizzie, it's boring. You're not missing anything. But you are. You're missing people growing up. My niece and nephew are not toddlers anymore. They're children. Yeah. And I haven't seen that. So
are you looking forward to it when it happens? I mean, not rushing, but looking forward to it whenever you decide to call it quits.
Yeah. I mean, I was talking to Phil last week. I was saying, oh, do you not think we could just move back now, you know? And he's dead right, he's sensible. He's like, no, it'll have a detriment to your cycling. It's just one more year of dedication. We can do it. And he's right, you know.
Is that it? Would it be over? You're going to call it quits in a year?
I think post-Tokyo, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Morning. Yeah, I think post-Tokyo, that'll be me done.
Yeah. I mean, you can always live here and still race as a pro. There's nothing stopping you training and, you know, living
no,
in the UK.
Not. But if I'm doing it, I'm doing it to win. I don't want to be anything less than the best version of what I can be. And I think living abroad does help that.
Yeah.
You know, there are people who do it. Don't get me wrong. There are professionals who live in the UK and do it and are very successful at it. Yeah. But I know my psyche. And if I wake up and I've got to do 4 hours, I can do it in the sunshine and the mountains of Monaco, or I can do it in the grim up north. You know, I'm going to, just being honest, like, it's such a hard profession that it makes sense to take the easiest option.
On days like today, though, the sun is out, you're in short sleeves. It's pretty special riding around here on a day like today, isn't it? It's lovely.
It's lovely, yeah. It's my favourite place in the world to ride. I love the terrain, like, it's kind of relentless, up and down all day. Suits my physical capabilities, and yeah, I really do love it.
Does it suit your capabilities, or did it form you? Did this landscape form the way you ride?
I'm not sure. Really not sure.
Because you have to be a punchy rider when you're growing up in Yorkshire, and I've ridden with the Downing brothers, for example, and Ben Swift, and
yeah.
They say that this place made them ride and race the way they do.
Yeah, potentially. I mean, Yorkshire people like to think that they're full of grit and all that, don't they? Not soft southerners, you know. But no, I'm not sure about that.
So it does beg the question, now that it's back on home roads, you've won the Worlds before, you're getting back to the form that you want after having Orla, does it feel like the stars are starting to align again?
You know, if I'm successful in Yorkshire, it's a fairy tale, isn't it? And I know that fairy tales are just that, you know, they don't always happen, they rarely happen. But I'm believing in it because, like I say, from previous experience, you have to be happy to be successful, and I've made the decision by having a daughter to be happy, and I'm enjoying cycling more than I ever have. So, the win would be the icing on the cake, but it's a massive challenge.
It would be massively popular though. I think on that Saturday, there are going to be so many people lining the route. I dare say more than for the men's race, frankly, because you are the hometown hero.
Yeah, no pressure, eh?
No, sorry, I don't want to pile up.
No, it's good, I like it. I mean, I don't understand when people let pressure get to them, because if you analyse what pressure is, it's just lots of people wanting you to do well, which is a good thing, right?
But your old foe, Mariana, is still there. She's having a bit of a renaissance, isn't she?
Oh, you can never discount Mariana.
No.
She would be one of the favourites, I think, for the Harrogate course.
You think?
Yeah, because she races so intelligently. And one thing that she's always had and she's never lost is that finishing kick. And I think the course in Harrogate could come down to a reduced lunge kick.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, the Worlds are always attritional, aren't they? Like the Nationals too, which obviously you know plenty about, having won it three times.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like, there are one-day races, but then those sort of races for jerseys just seem to grind the peloton down, don't they?
Yeah, they do. And there's always people who lift their game. They're championship riders. And I'd like to think I'm one of them. The Italians are a team of people who rise for the big days.
Like, yeah.
The Italian team are always phenomenal. You can always lift their game. So they'll be a team to watch too.
I'm sure you feel the same, but I'm already really excited.
Yeah.
By the prospect of the World Championships being back on British roads in such a long time. And also in Yorkshire, and let's just finish by talking about your home county. God's own country, they keep telling me. But it has. I think this part of Britain in particular has pushed the take-up of cycling more than any other.
Yeah, the support in Yorkshire is phenomenal. Everyone likes a free party, especially in Yorkshire. And that's how they see bike racing. It's not just about the sport, it's about having a street party before the race comes through, or your community coming together. So yeah, there's always a party around it, which I think helps.
Yeah.
They don't take it too seriously, you know.
Well, I hope you enjoy it.
Yeah, I'm determined to enjoy it.
Good. For now, Lizzie, just such a privilege to ride with you on your home roads, seeing you back here in Yorkshire. Thanks so much for talking to me and riding with me.
Thanks for having me.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.